Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're providing you news and commentary rooted in a commitment to individual liberty, personal responsibility, limited government, and the rule of law. Coming up, I'm going to visit with Dr. Bob McClure. He's the CEO of the James Madison Institute. Right now we have with us Mark Shulman. Mark is the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. You need to check it out. It's called HistoryCentral.com. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. Tell us a little bit about HistoryCentral.com.
History Central has been a website that's been up since before the 1996 presidential elections. It started with the history of presidential elections. It expanded to include all of American history. It includes, addition to the American history, it includes world history, timelines and events. It includes special sections on the U.S. Navy, on aviation, on railroads, different nations in the world. It's also on all the states in the United States. So it's a comprehensive website for all of history, a great place for students to do research and to learn about things as they come. And it gets updated in terms of the timeline every couple of months as a new event reaches that level that we think it's going to be historic. We add it to the timeline, obviously, and write up information about it.
Again, HistoryCentral.com. I hope you check it out. So let's talk about current global events, and right now a little some surprises in Turkey.
Well, I don't know whether it's surprises or not. I mean, the reality is that on one hand, some of the polls showed that Erdogan wasn't going to win. Over the night, it looked like he might have won, but then the final tally shows that he did not make the 50%, so now there's going to have to be a runoff. Will he do something to, you know, tilt in his favor? I'm sure he'll try.
Yeah.
He certainly did try in terms of the election results. He delayed some of the results from the areas that he knew would be voting against him. So for a while, there was that sense that, you know, the same sense that was in the United States. For a while, he was ahead, and then he was no longer ahead once all the votes got counted. So he tried that, but no one really trusts him, and he had control. So right now, there'll be a runoff in 2 weeks. The markets are not happy because no one likes uncertainty. They would have been happier with a certain outcome, whichever way it would have gone. So,
yeah. It's a kind of an uphill. It's an uphill battle for his competitor. And by the way,
absolutely. Look, he has control of all the levers of government. He's weakened the judiciary. There's no other power centers, but he does allow elections. So we'll have to see. I mean, again, I don't. I mean, I guess I do, but I don't understand these people. They've been in power for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, time to give it up. I mean, the United States was really, really smart after Franklin Roosevelt's. First of all, it was very smart, President Washington, by starting that two-term tradition. Roosevelt broke it. You could make an argument there were good reasons we were heading into World War II and all of those things, and I'm sure most people were happy that he was the leader during that time. On the other hand, afterwards, it was clear there was a mistake.
Yeah,
and so presidents should 2 terms. It's enough. You know, that's clearly the case, and it should be the case with Erdogan, but it doesn't seem to be. It should be the case with Netanyahu here in Israel. It doesn't seem to be. We have a bunch of leaders that keep on hanging on,
as our founders predicted.
Yep, very much so.
Yeah. So, Mark, his competitor, and I can't even say his name. He has no vowels or anything in his name, at least that I understand. But so I couldn't pronounce his name. But irrespective, apparently he's labeled as center-left and anti-military when it comes to government intervention or government activity.
Look, it's very hard to know. You know, if anyone's trying to position themselves different than they're the one, and it's really hard to know. You really can't be anti-military because then the military will come in and have a coup, although Erdogan stopped the last one against him. So yeah. It's so hard to know, and I would really say we'd have to wait and see. I mean, Erdogan has always been an enigma. He came in as a liberal, ended up being an Islamist. He, you know, Turkey is part of NATO, and yet he refuses really to take sides when it comes to Ukraine and give them support. So it's unclear, and Erdogan's position is unclear on many things. You know, regardless, it's just time for a change.
Yeah.
I'm a very strong believer. I don't care where it is. I'm a believer in I'm a believer in two things very, very clearly. One, don't stay as president or leader for more than 8 years maximum. B, if you lose, get off the table, let someone else take over. These things, I mean, just so many leaders refused to make way, which is terrible, frankly.
Right. And, you know, a new broom sweeps clean, is the old saying, and yet it's sometimes...
Yeah, it may not be totally clean, but at least some of the dirt will be washed out, you know? I mean...
And sometimes just brooms. A different viewpoint. I mean, many times this behavior is driven by conservative voters, and by conservative, I mean who just don't like change. They prefer...
Right, absolutely. You prefer the devil you know than the devil you don't.
Right.
There's some truth to that. You understand that. But on the other hand... It's not good for democracy, clearly.
Right.
No, you know, the biggest problem with a leader that's been in power for too long is they identify their own needs with the needs of the state. It becomes one and the same, which it obviously isn't.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what happens time and time again when someone stays in power for too long.
I should point out to our listeners that you're in Israel, in Tel Aviv right now, and of course we had some, it was kind of a dust-up in...
right, absolutely. There was a mini war, a confirmation. It's hard to know how to describe it. What happened was, 2 weeks ago, the Islamic Jihad, which is a breakaway jihadi movement in Gaza, launched 105 missiles at Israel because a Palestinian prisoner who was on a hunger strike died. And Israel gave a relatively minor response, but said there'd be a stronger response later. And the stronger response was an attack that killed four of the leaders of the Islamic Jihad within minutes of each other, seconds of each other, actually, not even minutes. Simultaneously attack on all of where they were staying. And that started a round of missile attacks and Israel counterattacks and went on for 5 days. Nothing much was accomplished. None of these things solve anything, unfortunately. Just brings a little more death and a little more destruction, and no easy solutions to begin with, and certainly not with these rounds that make no sense but happen anyway.
So what I don't understand is the Palestinians seems to me are just, at least the leaders, filled with hate. They don't seem to have any kind of ideal or any kind of specific thing they'd like to accomplish except to get rid of Jews.
Well, the reality is that's what they want. They want to get rid of the state of Israel.
Yeah.
That's been their goal. They have not ultimately, in other words, there was fairly advanced negotiations with them, both during the time of Ehud Barak with Clinton, and then with Ehud Olmert with Bush. And in both cases, both made significant headway, and in the end the Palestinians walked away because they couldn't get everything they wanted, which basically for Israel was willing to give up almost all the territories conquered in 67, but in return it wanted an end of conflict.
Yeah.
And the Palestinians just wanted the territory and no end of conflict. So that's really where it came down to, and as a result we're stuck in this endless cycle. The Palestinian people suffer. And the world blames Israel, but the reality of it is that there would have been peace dozens of times over the last 70 years. All the Palestinians had to do was agree to accept Israel's existence.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that the Palestinians would prefer not to be a state or a country because they could be more held accountable if they in fact were a state? Like
no, Israel? I don't know about that because I mean they have a semi-state in Gaza with Hamas. I don't think they're more. You know, they're not willing, in order to be an independent state recognized, they're not willing to give up the conflict.
Yeah.
You know, this is a very strange situation where Israel gets blamed for the fact that they have a semi-blockade on Gaza because they want to try to limit the amount of missiles that get in. And then people say, well, why do you have a blockade? Well, you know what? When Hamas took over Gaza, all that was required from them was to say that they accept the agreements that have made previously and they will not attack Israel.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They say we're in an internal war. So what is Israel supposed to do? Allow guns in? Allow missiles in? I mean, it's absurd. So it's an absurd situation. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's, you know, in the West Bank where it's part of it is occupied, part of it is not. It's also not good. Occupation is a terrible thing.
Right.
But no one knows how to end it. So it's we're in this endless cycle with no easy solutions.
Mark Shulman, again, the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. Mark, we got to take a little break. Can you stick around?
Absolutely, Bob.
All right, we're going to have more here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Do you have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratistelle Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Finish what you started with a Hodges University Wheel. You can complete your bachelor's degree in as little as 1 year with your previously earned credits. What's the Wheel? It's a customized bachelor's degree in organizational management. Learn about and apply the business, management, and leadership skills you need to advance your career. You can get unmatched educational experience with classes held once a week on campus in Fort Myers, in Port Charlotte, or Naples. You'll be immersed in classes taught by professors with real-world experience in the areas of business, management, and leadership. This degree can be applied to all areas of professional career. Learn more by calling 239-938-7700. That's 239-938-7700. Or visit Hodges.edu. Stay near and go far with Hodges University.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by Choice Social. Choice Social is a new, refreshing social networking platform, and you can find out more and download the app by visiting choicesocial.us. Coming up, we're going to be visiting with Jim McTague, former Barron's Washington Bureau Chief. Right now, we continue the conversation with Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com, and his dog. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Bob.
So, Mark, let's turn our attention to Thailand. Some elections going on there, and maybe you could talk about them and their significance.
Right, so there's elections in Thailand. The two parties that were most against the monarchy and the military gained the most votes. They gained enough votes to probably create a coalition, but the prime minister can veto it. It's not quite clear how they're going to form a government or if they're going to be able to form a government. But clearly, the will of the people in Thailand is A, turning away from the monarchy and turning away from the military. So those are both good things.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to see. Very hard, once again, very hard to remove people in power, and of course the whole issue of monarchies is a whole other story, obviously.
Although there's a tradition of monarchy in Thailand, is there not?
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
For many years.
So let's move to Ukraine, the continuing saga of Ukraine.
Right. Well, it looks like some part of a counteroffensive has begun. It's not clear whether it's only in the Bakhmut area where they've retaken a significant amount of ground on all the flanks to Bakhmut. So we'll have to see. I am of the opinion that the Russian army is going to collapse at one point. This will be 1917 all over again.
Mm.
And just collapse at one point. They just do not have trained personnel. They don't have people who are committed to the battle. They're just not ready. And on the other hand, the Ukrainians took 40, 50,000 men off the front line, sent them some to Germany, some to the UK, to different places, and got advanced training. Learned how to operate as in battalion-sized groups in integrated combat. I think we're going to see some major changes, and I think the Russians are going to fall apart. But I could be wrong.
Well,
we did see yesterday somebody behind Russian lines down 6 Russian aircraft. So it's not quite clear whether it was the Ukrainians pushed their anti-aircraft missile batteries right up to the front line and then were able to cover part of the Russian area or not, but that took place too.
What kind of planes?
That, two fighter jets, two transports, and two helicopters, from
what
I understand.
That's a big deal.
Yep.
That's pretty amazing. Yep. So in the meantime, Zelensky is traveling. He's kind of hopping around the world here.
Yeah, he's went to Germany, and he's been to France, and I actually had it off the air. I said he wasn't in England, but as we were off the air, I scrolled my Twitter feed, and there was a picture of him being greeted as he landed by helicopter in England by the British Prime Minister. So he's in England right now. He's garnering support. Wherever he goes, people don't say no to him. They don't always give him exactly what he asks for, or they don't end up keeping totally to their bargains, but they're giving him a lot more than ever before. And all the militaries of Europe are rearming themselves. Again, you know, we've discussed this before. It's a real challenge because of what's happened over the last 20 years in terms of manufacturing capabilities, in terms of armaments. So we've had all sorts of ideas and things that have taken place, and arms plants that were shuttered in Eastern Europe that are now working again, Eastern Europe, but within, you know, within NATO, in places like Romania and Czech Republic and those sort of places. A lot of arms manufacturing plants are being brought back online. It takes time to do that, but it's a major challenge. And again, you know, the world, and certainly the American military, didn't expect a high intensity of warfare that would last this period of time.
Well, thinking back on part of the Russian strategy, it was to freeze them out, so to speak, to cut off their supply of energy and to make it so that people would freeze to death in the Ukraine. But what's happened to that strategy and what's going on?
Failed completely. Total. Look, they had double failure. First, they had hoped to freeze Europe, right? That was
right,
the idea. They were going to cut off energy supplies and Europe would come begging and stop supporting Ukraine. Well, guess what? The end result is at this point, Europe is almost 100%. By next winter, Europe will be 100% independent of Europe, of Russian oil and gas.
How did that take place?
Took place in two ways. One, using other sources that had been closed, mines that have been closed, oil fields that have been closed. B, importing gas from many different places, including the United States, which they were not importing until now. And see, conscious conservation. I mean, more and more of Europe is moving over to clean energy. I mean, there was an article recently in Norway, over 60% of the cars over 90% of the cars being sold at this point are electric. And in Oslo itself, about 50% of the cars on the road are now electric. And so that uses a lot less gasoline, obviously. They need whatever for power plants, but they don't need anything to operate the cars, which is a big deal.
So I have a theory, I'd like to run it by you and get your feedback, but right now, of course, we're seeing the escalating cost of energy throughout the globe, and it's primarily because of the green movement. My thought is that somehow, some way, the green movement could start to embrace gas, natural gas, as a solution and declare it to be quote-unquote green. Therefore, lowering the, of course, it would gas would go up in price, but it would lower the cost of gas around the globe and make things more manageable, especially come up to an election here in the United States.
Well, I don't know. It's hard to know. What is clear at this point is building solar energy plants is now cheaper than building a coal plant in terms of the cost of the energy, etc. So I think we're going to see the power of the marketplaces taking over very quickly. So much so, we have reverse regulation in Texas where they're trying to ban or to give incentives only for fossil fuel power and not for solar power, which has become the big one of the biggest employers in Texas. Texas is a good place for solar energy, obviously, sunny and dry. But we're going to see a major change. It's taking place right now because the price has just gone down. You know, when you manufacture enough of something and you're in a technology that is moving forward, I mean, there's nothing really happening in fossil fuels, right? I mean, maybe a little bit on the pollution side, but there's no great breakthroughs. But in solar energy, you're having breakthroughs every year in terms of efficiency and everything else. So the price keeps on dropping, and at this point, it's just cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, so it makes me wonder what's going to happen to those panels though in 12 or 15 years when they're no longer useful, and where they're going to be. We're going to put them. I think there's going to be a real price to be paid.
I think you get. I don't. Why wouldn't they stop working in 15 years?
Oh, that's the. I've heard the life of those panels is 12 to 15 years, something like that.
Okay, I'm not sure that's correct, but let's say it is. I'm sure there will be solutions. The reality is, you know, again, the market will determine ultimately.
Yeah.
And that's what we all want, right?
Yes, absolutely. So. Mark Shulman, again, the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. I hope you check out the website. It's terrific, especially for young people in your life. Really turn them on to history. HistoryCentral.com. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Have a great week.
You as well. Thank you, Mark. All right, coming up, we're going to be visiting with Dr. Bob McClure. He is the CEO of James Madison Institute. That and more right here on the Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.